For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another episode of Believe in FSU Basketball. This is your one and only Nick Andre. Thank you guys once again for tuning in. We have a lot to discuss. My guy Austin will be on momentarily to talk about the men's side of things, you know, as they dive into the offseason. A lot of guys who may be on Florida State's radar as far as in the transfer portal, and a lot of guys that we may see on the current roster being on their way out. But first, we have to talk about the women's team because they're going dancing. It is official. Florida State women's team is in the NCAA tournament. They are the 9th seed in the Portland region, number 4, and they face the Alabama Crimson Tide in the first round. This is going to be a fun, exciting matchup. It's been a little over a week now since we last saw Florida State take that terrible loss to NC State in the ACC semifinal matchup, especially after such good showings in the first matchup against Wake Forest and then that second matchup against Syracuse, where honestly, a lot of people didn't even expect them to win, which, let's be real, they're delusional for not even thinking that Florida State was not going to win that one. And actually, take that back. I'm not going to say that they were delusional, but they should know that Florida State was going to come and bring their best effort. And give credit to Syracuse. I mean, I know that we ended up winning by double digits, but, you know, they did their best as far as staying in the game and even in the fourth quarter, finding a way to slowly cut into that lead and then kind of crawl back into the game. But luckily, we were able to finish. And like I mentioned earlier, lost to NC State in the semifinal matchup. But now this is a new, fresh start. We're in the NCAA tournament. Last year, they lost to Georgia in the first round. And now it's time for redemption. But, you know, it's like I mentioned before, and I'm going to continue to mention it. Last year, there was no Taniya Latson. She ended up missing all of March due to injury. And now she's healthy. And people don't understand how much that makes a big difference. You know, that 20, 21 points per game is going to make a huge difference, especially now that we're going into the NCAA tournament. However, Alabama is no slouch. They were one of the more underrated teams in the SEC. They ranked around like top 10 rebounding, and they just have a lot of terrific all-around scores. As far as all-time with Florida State and Alabama, Florida State has won every matchup. They're 4-0, I believe, since 2011. I want to say I have to go back and check that. And their last matchup was in 2016. So it's been a while since we last seen this team. But now, you know, we're going to have a full glimpse of, you know, what Alabama brings to the table. Alabama, one thing about Alabama is they are a terrific all-around team. I love what they bring. I love what they provide defensively. They apply a lot of pressure, you know, and they're really active in their zone coverage as far as rotating. And then on offense, one thing about them is that they're going to find a way to move the ball. They're going to find a way to move without the basketball and just find a way to score. It doesn't matter how much you pressure them. You know, they're going to continue to swing the ball and find a way to get higher percentage shots. They have an abundance of great all-around scorers. One of the ones that stands out is Sarah Ashley Barker, who, in my opinion, was definitely one of the best scorers in the ACC as a whole. Just her three-way ability. And then on top of that, just her size as well is going to give Florida State a lot of problems. So that's definitely something that you're going to have to look into. I want to see, you know, if they could possibly rotate. Obviously, a lot of Sarah Bajetti guarding her. Even players like Amaya Bonner or even Alexis Tucker, you know, covering her just because of her size and presence on the floor. So that's probably going to be one of the biggest keys to slowing her down. But also, Alabama has an abundance of great all-around scores as well. Unfortunately, they were going to be without Jessica Timmons, who announced Monday morning that she will be sidelined throughout the tournament due to a torn ACL. So, you know, definitely wish her a speedy recovery. But they also got an abundance of other players as well. Like, Loyal McQueen is a dog. I love what she provides on both ends of the floor. Aaliyah Nye is a great all-around scorer as well. And they just have an abundance of other players as well. So this is not going to be any slouch matchup whatsoever. You know, this is an 8-9 seed, so they are evenly matched. And I'm really interested to see, you know, what this matchup can come down to. Now, offensively, I mentioned Taniya Latson. Obviously, she's going to have to shine, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what the others do as well. And this is where moments like Mikayla Timpson has to step up. You know, Mikayla Timpson had a great ACC tournament, in my opinion, especially in that matchup against Wake Forest, where I felt like she was really the biggest X factor in that game. or you could get, you know, Mario Gordon, who had a terrific all-around game against Syracuse, or even a Sarah Bajetti, or, you know, like I say, you know, even an Alexis Tucker or an Amaya Bonder, or even a Carla Viega. So I think offensively, this team is just going to have to be clicking on both ends of the floor, you know, on that end of the floor. And we already know how gifted this team is, you know, whenever they are pushing a transition. So once they get that transition game going, that's where they'll be dangerous. And that's where I feel like Alabama's going to have a lot of issues trying to slow them down. So, you know, that's just something to definitely look out for. But besides that, I'm really excited for this matchup. It's going to take place this Friday. And, you know, I'm just really excited to see, you know, what goes on from there. If you ask me, I believe that we're coming out of this matchup. I believe that Coach Wyckoff will have this team prepared. I believe, like I mentioned, you know, they are evenly matched, but I feel like Florida State just has something about them that will help them get on top. If you ask me, I'm just going to be honest. I have Florida State getting to the Elite Eight, and it's not going to be an easy road, because there's a lot of great teams in that Portland region that people have to look out for. But I think that Florida State will be mentally ready. I feel like they'll be physically ready. And I think that they'll just find a way to just, you know, come out on top of these matchups and just be able to, you know, to just keep dancing. So NCAA, March Madness is here, y'all. March Madness is here, and people have to be excited. I know that the men's team did not make the tournament or even the NIT tournament. However, the women's team is here, and they're looking to make noise in this NCAA tournament. And I've been saying this is a team that you don't want to see in March. So now that we're finally here, let's enjoy it. Let's get prepared for this Friday. Now, without further ado, Austin's coming on, and we're about to talk about the men's side. Austin, how you doing, man? It's glad to have you back on, man. Hope everything's going well for you, man.
Absolutely. We're full on into portal season. Portal opened Monday morning at midnight, and I think we've already seen 300 to 400 different entries across college basketball. So a lot to keep up with right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot that went down. And I mean, we already have the NCAA tournament bracket already set. We have the NIT bracket already set. But unfortunately, Florida State is nowhere in neither one of those brackets. So I know we mentioned it before that we believe that the UNC game was the last game of the year. But I mean, that was still projected, but now it's official. So how do you feel now since it's the official offseason?
Not surprised. I was told that Florida State did decline an NIT invite. So I'm not surprised whatsoever. The season was the season. You know, I said all year they were a 500 basketball team. They went basically 500. They just got there in a very frustrating way, and hopefully they can build it on some things that they accomplished this season. You know, basically doubled their win total from the season before. Obviously, 22-23 was a historic mess, but improved on some things this year, and hopefully they can continue that into 24-25.
100% agree. It's unfortunate that we weren't able to play past the ACC tournament, but at the end of the day, you know, this is definitely an opportunity to just regroup and figure out what's next for the program moving forward. So let me ask you this. So you mentioned it, definitely a huge improvement this season compared to last year. So what differences would you say happened this year that you may have not seen in a 22-23 season when they only won 9 games?
I thought they were better at scoring inside the paint. You know, getting Jameer Watkins obviously helps with that, and his improvements throughout the season helped with that. But I thought Jalen Worley made some big strides getting into the paint. I thought Cam Corn was better finishing around the basket when he caught the ball. Obviously, that was the biggest factor there. But I just thought overall Florida State did a much better job in the paint offensively. And, you know, the numbers back that up. They shot 49% on two-pointers last year, 51.5% this year. And they're better forcing turnovers this year. And that's something Florida State always wants to do. But they just didn't have the personnel to get it done last year. Only forced a turnover rate of about 17%. This year is about 21% and in the top 30 nationally. So there's definitely some improvements, some things to build on, but they've still got a lot more they've got to improve on. They've got to fix rebounding. They've got to fix three-point shooting, really on both sides, three-point defense and three-point offense. But I thought overall is a great building block in next season.
I 100% agree. When you talk about forcing turnovers, I think that's definitely something that Jameer Watkins has came in and helped upon, especially with, you know, how well he is defensively, you know, active with his hands, being able to interrupt passing lanes and be able to force turnovers. So that was definitely one thing as well. And, you know, Florida State's a really fun team in transition. I mean, I don't think anybody could discredit it. You know, they're definitely probably a better team when they're playing in transition rather than they are in their half-court offense. And not saying that they're not great in their half-court offense, because, I mean, they do have some good moments. But once they're off to the races in transition, you know, especially with that versatility on the floor, you know, that's something that, you know, that's definitely hard for a lot of team defenses to stop. But I mean, as far as everything that you mentioned, I 100% agree. Perimeter scoring was definitely a struggle throughout the season. I mean, I even mentioned it before. You know, Darren Green Jr. was by far the best shooter on his team, and even he had his inconsistent moments. Primo Spears, you know, he was pretty much up and down, but he's more of a mid-range scorer in a way. You know, he started to show some flashes, you know, as far as knocking down the three, but that's not necessarily his strong suit. So I think that's something that'd be really big going into the offseason is that, you know, can we land some perimeter scorers, you know, heading into next season. But I mean, besides that, I mean, it was definitely improvement, you know, compared to last year. I mean, I mentioned it before on several episodes ago, you know, this is a good team, but not a great team. But, you know, considering how good that this season has went, you know, for us to be exactly at around 500 compared to winning 9 games the previous year, it just shows the direction that this program is going into. So it's just small steps, you know, to be able to get us back in the direction of as far as, you know, being contenders in the country.
Yeah, the highs of Primo Spears, just going back to that real quick, the highs of Primo Spears were great. You know, his ability to get into the paint with an elite first dribble. I mean, he's got a very quick first step, and he's got a really nice short dribble to kind of get the defenders off balance so he can get to the basket. Florida State hasn't had someone like that in a long time, really. But the lows are very low. I mean, there's plenty of games where he's shooting 5 of 14 and turnovers and not great defensive moments. So it was just a balancing act with really a lot of the roster. But like I said earlier, I do think they made a lot of improvements from last season. And the other thing I didn't even mention, they played so much faster this year, which I think is something Florida State wants to do. If you look at KenPom, this is the fastest they've played since the Elite Eight run in 2018 right at 71 possessions per game. That's top 40 in the country. That's where Florida State wants to live. And I think they can get even faster if they can get some of these turnovers faster, if they can get stops quicker. It kind of seems like the trend we've seen the last few years on defense, where if it wasn't a turnover, offenses were just getting screens, getting pick and rolls, and just waiting to get the mismatch they wanted and then attacking. They're willing to be patient against Florida State's defense. So still some improvements to be made there for sure, but love the progress they've made.
100% agree. Let me ask you this. How do you feel about the interior presence? Because I've heard Coach Ham say in several interviews about how this team lacks a lot of rim protection and everything. So I can kind of agree to an extent, especially, you know, with a lot of the rim protectors that Florida State has had in the past. You know, a lot of guys, you know, that were 7 feet and over, just being able to really impose their will inside. And it's like I agree with him, but it's like I still feel like, you know, we still had some good presence. I mean, Cam Corn was a great, you know, presence inside, but I feel like it was also an effort thing as well, you know, with the rest of the guys. How do you feel about the interior presence as far as, you know, finishing inside and then, of course, protecting the basket on defense?
Yeah, I think it's more, right now it's more committee-based, where it's the guys like Baba Miller and Jameer Watkins and even Jalen Worley just coming in from the weak side and blocking out the rim. It's not how it was, you know, at the late 2010s where you're funneling into the big and they're deflecting shots from there. Right now, it's all scheme-based. You know, that's part of what you get when you're switching 1 through 5 is you're going to get your fives out on an island, and that leaves people on the backside to try and cover for that. I've said it in a couple articles. I'm of the opinion they're going to go back to that late 2010s defense where they're switching 1 through 4 for the most part and funneling everything into the big. I just think that fits Florida State better, and hopefully they get the personnel this offseason to do that. And even if they stuck with some of their current personnel, I think that would fit Jalen Gainey a lot better for where he is coming off of, you know, a pretty serious knee injury and is going to have another surgery this offseason. So if he decided to stick around, I think that would fit him a lot more.
I agree with that Jalen Gainey thing. And, you know, and it's crazy because, you know, like it's like I mentioned before, you know, he got off to a slow start. And I mean, and it's, you know, it's fair, you know, especially coming off of, you know, the injuries that he faced. But he to me, he started to show a little more improvements defensively, especially with his switching. But you can still tell that, you know, he's not as quick and he's not as mobile as, you know, as most other guys are. So, you know, if they decide to just switch 1 through 4, then just allow him to be, you know, just a strict rim protector, you know, that'd be great as well. But, you know, like, I mean, it's like I say, you know, I mean, it's up to him, you know, whether he wants to stick around. And if he does, you know, let's see if he's utilized, you know, in that certain manner. But let me ask you this. So you put out an article, I believe, about a few days ago, and you had your report card. So before we dive into it, so what were your thought process going into that article that you wrote?
So I wanted to do it based off my expectations for the player. I didn't want to just do it, you know, the best player gets an A, the worst players get an F, even if that kind of went that way. But for a player like Bol Bowen, who I didn't even expect to play that much this year, I maybe thought he could redshirt just because of his size and his frame. for him to have some of the moments he did and have the flashes he did, I loved it. And obviously that's just one specific example. We'll go into a few of them here, but that was more my thought process. Just do it based on expectations, not as much the overall season, because otherwise there'd be it would just be Jameer Watkins as an A and then a whole bunch of people as season Bs. And I didn't really want to do that.
No, I get that. I got a few guys listed. I'm not going to go through every single player, but here's a few guys that I thought was interesting. Darren Green Jr. was a C-. And I can agree with that in a way. I mean, I thought Darren played pretty good, but I also feel like he didn't play to his maximum potential. I mean, I mentioned earlier how, you know, he's had his inconsistent moments. Yes, he is the best shooter on the team, but he has had his moments where, you know, where he didn't necessarily show up on the perimeters. Like, for instance, like Miami, he shot exceptionally well from the three-point line. And then heading into the ACC tournament where, you know, we didn't get nothing from him. So talk about rating him a C-.
Yeah, and if for the people that didn't read the article, I said it would have been a lot lower if not for that Miami game where he had 26 points. Because I had this article pretty much done by the end of February, and I had him as a D. And then he comes out with that. I'm like, he can't score 26 on senior day against Miami, and I give him a D. So I bumped him up. I just thought from the end of January to the first game of March, he shot the ball poorly. He looked disinterested. He was taking a bunch of shots that really stalled the offense. And the game he missed, which was the home game against Boston College, right? Yeah. It was the best the offense looked all season. You know, the ball was moving side to side. Guys were getting good looks. It never felt like the ball stopped at one point. And then, you know, is that a coincidence? Maybe, maybe not. But I just thought he's a fifth-year senior. Like, you expect more than what we got out of him this year. He did a great job with steals, you know, career high on that. I commend him for that. But I just thought offensively, there's something missing.
I agree.
He should have been like a sixth man. That's just what his role is best suited for. He can't be a first, second, third option on a team.
I can definitely understand your points. You know, because, I mean, Darren Green, I mean, he's such a good shooter, but, you know, he doesn't really stick out as, like, an elite all-around scorer. Even though, in my opinion, I feel like, in a way, he started to just slowly improve on his scoring off the dribble, but he's always been more of a spot-up guy, more of a guy that, you know, come off the screens, come off the pin downs, and just being able to, you know, catch the ball in rhythm. And that's why, even for me, you know, I feel like, you know, especially in a lot of those games, I felt like there's a lot of games where he wasn't necessarily in rhythm. Like, I don't know, it's just something that I don't know if people have ever noticed with him, but there's been many possessions where, you know, where he'll come catch the ball on the right wing and then, you know, go for a pump fake, you know, get the defender in the air and then shoot. Like, I'm not necessarily a fan of it because it takes him all out of rhythm. Like, Darren's a guy where it's like you got to catch and you just got to fire, and it's like, you know, it's just got to be one motion and just one rhythm. So, you know, but besides that, I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, he had his pretty decent moments, but overall, you know, it was a little underwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah.
Another guy that I had was Josh Nickleberry, which, I mean, you know, if anybody's been listening, you know, obviously Austin's been really critical of him. So talk about giving him a solid F.
Not even an F. I gave him an F-. I just thought, I mean, for a guy that he came in shooting, you know, above 40% from three at LaSalle, he shoots 26% from three this year. He looked unplayable in a lot of these ACC games. And even if you just look at the metrics, he was lowest on the team in offensive box plus minus, second lowest on the team in defensive box plus minus. He was third lowest in offensive rating, only above Primo Spears and Cameron Fletcher, who Fletcher only played 7 games. And then he was third worst in defensive rating above Tom House and Deontay Green, two guys who we expect to transfer. We just didn't get quality fifth-year senior play out of Josh Nickleberry. And I didn't even have that high of expectations for him. If you go back to my season preview article, I said, you know, if he can come in, give you 10 to 12 minutes, knock down one or two threes per game at about a 35, 38% rate, perfect. He couldn't even do that. 26%. He hasn't hit a three since, I don't even know when, middle of or early of February, maybe. Like, it's been a long time. It was a long time since we saw him hit a shot. And they kind of needed shooting desperately. I mean, they finished the season at like 31% from three. They needed shooting desperately, and he couldn't provide it. The one thing he's supposed to bring to the team.
Yeah, I feel like in a way he did have his moments. I mean, I like what he you know, the way that he was able to score in the mid-range. But I can agree with you. You know, I feel like, you know, especially being a fifth-year senior, you expect more of a guy out of a guy of his caliber, especially coming into this team and just, you know, being one of the upperclassmen, you know, having that experience already. I feel like, you know, his scoring punch could have been really huge in that second unit, but, you know, fortunately, it just wasn't on a consistent basis. So, you know, as far as you're giving him an F minus, you know, I can't necessarily argue with anything as far as from that aspect. Primo Spears, you gave him a D plus. You know, he's another guy, you know, had his ups and downs. You know, he had moments where, you know, he shined. You know, he looked like he might have been the best player on the floor offensively. One thing I'll say about Primo is that, you know, one thing that I could say that I saw a little bit more out of him as the season went on was a little bit more playmaking. And I think that's something that a lot of people did want to see from him, you know, as the season went on, because obviously we know how good of a scorer that he can be. But as far as, you know, him putting the ball on the floor, just being able to create plays for others, I feel like that was really impressive as a whole. But he still, you know, he had his moments where he didn't shoot the ball particularly well. I mean, even in his first game, he shot, like, I believe 2 for 14, you know, in that contest as well. So, you know, talk about Primo and him and giving him a D plus.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned earlier, really up and down. I thought the highs were very high and the lows were very low. That NC State game at home, I thought he played tremendous. I mean, distributing the ball, dishing the ball to cutters down the lane, was making shots at a high rate. But as I just said in the segment about Josh Nickleberry, he had the second lowest offensive rating on the team. And when he's supposed to provide offense, that's just you can't be the second lowest offensive rating on the team. It just can't happen. I don't think he's a fit culturally. To me, he's just a smaller Caleb Mills, and Caleb Mills didn't work last year and the year before that. So I didn't like the take at the beginning of the season. I probably could have voiced that more than I did, and sounds like kind of like a hater saying it after the season, but I didn't love it. I really didn't. And I get the idea of him. It just didn't work. It's time to move on.
I can agree with that. I just don't know if Coach Ham's system is something that necessarily fits him, because I feel like he's a guy in a way that needs the ball in his hands to be effective. Not saying that he can't play without the basketball, but, you know, I feel like he's more so effective, you know, when he does have the ball in his hands, you know, when he is able to do, you know, a multitude of other things as far as scoring and playmaking. But, you know, I can definitely understand your point of view as far as Primo, you know, as far as Primo being up and down. I mean, having the second worst offensive rating on the team is just, you know, it's kind of crazy to me, especially, you know, when we consider him such a great all-around scorer, at least from the mid-range per se. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can't argue with that whatsoever.
And he ended up shooting 39% from the floor, 26% from three, and a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. It's just not good enough.
100% agree. Cam Corn got a B minus, which is pretty good. Cam was really impactful this year. And I think we saw it around like mid to late December when he was sidelined with the injury. And then they went on that, and then they went on that small losing streak. But then, you know, once he came back at the beginning of conference play, you know, we saw how good that they played. So talk about Cam Corn and his impact.
Yeah, he's a guy that he was probably the guy I struggled with most on giving a grade, because we saw some play really all throughout February and into March where he was dominant. You know, especially at Pitt, he couldn't be stopped down low. But he had some struggles catching the ball. His free throw shooting especially fell off a cliff this season. You know, he shot 79% as a freshman. I think he ended up at 68% this year, 67%, something like that. He didn't take as many threes as his freshman season, so maybe it was all purposeful as he tried to rework his shot. But the free throw shooting did worry me a little bit. But on the positive side, he, like I said, he was dominant down low at times. If he can catch the ball consistently, he could legitimately average 16 points per game next year. I don't think that's out of the question, considering he averaged close to 10 this year. And like we saw in his freshman year, the potential is there for him to be that Fiondu Cavangeli type player where he can either start or come off the bench and give you an impact down low, which is something Florida State likes to have.
Yeah, one thing that I'll say about this Florida State team is when it came down to the bigs, I felt like nobody deserved that starting center spot more than Cam Corn, just because I feel like he brought the physicality. I mean, we talk about, you know, him being able to just impose his will inside of both ends of the floor. You know, he's very versatile on defense, you know, just being able to switch, you know, and guard smaller defenders, his ability to be able to play in the pick and roll, his ability to, you know, catch the ball on the block and just being able to, you know, make plays from that aspect. And then, of course, you know, he showed some flashes of knocking down some mid-range shots. So if he can just slowly improve his overall game, you know, I think that he'll be fine with this Florida State team. I feel like he gels with a lot of the guys, you know, on and off the floor. And I feel like he's only been a plus to this team, you know, throughout the course of his career.
I agree. For him, it's going to come down to defense. I think that's going to be where he has to really make the biggest strides this offseason. Again, if we go back to the metrics we were talking about with Nickleberry and Primo, He was first in offensive rating, second in offensive box plus minus, but the defensive metrics start to fall off a little bit. If he can make those improvements, and again, I think a scheme switch could help him a lot. If he can make those improvements, I think he could be, you know, one of the better bigs in the ACC next year.
I agree. 100% agree. So we already know that you gave Jameer Watkins an A. Who was the second highest player on this team?
It was Bol Bowen.
Like
I said earlier, he was just he so far exceeded my expectations that he was really the only player besides Jameer that I could put in that A range. I forget if I had him at an A minus or B plus. I know I had him somewhere around there. But I really like the strides he made. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him be your starting power forward next year if he can refine the jump shot a little bit, get a little bit more comfortable handling the ball. Excuse me. I think he could be a really good player for this team, and I think his ceiling is limitless.
I 100% agree. I want to say it was probably around like early to mid-December where I started to really see the impact of Taylor Bol Bowen, and I was saying, oh yeah, like this guy needs to be a part of this rotation. Like, you know, it's no question, you know.
He had four steals in like 8 minutes, and I forget what game it was, but I remember watching going,
I remember that, yeah.
It was at Miami in early January. He had four steals in 8 minutes and all four of them. I was like, oh my God, this player is insane.
Yeah, he's been showing an impact, you know, as far as rebounding, as far as steals. He's shown the flashes of being able to space the floor and knock down 3-point shots. You know, he can play so effectively without the ball in his hands. So he just does just about everything that really helps this team go, man. And, you know, just watching his emergence throughout the course of the season as a freshman has just really been impressive. So Taylor Bol Bowen is here to stay. I don't see him going anywhere. I think that the coaching staff loves him. I think that the rest of the team loves him. So, you know, just his impact as a whole. And I want to say that, you know, a lot of people, I think they had some questions coming into the season for Taylor just because, you know, he did come in as a 4-star athlete, which, I mean, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing per se. I know he's not a 5-star, mm-hmm. but, you know, not a bad thing. But I think now with him just being able to gel so well with the team this year, I think a lot of people have started, you know, become more high on him.
Yeah, totally agree.
Right. But as Austin said at the beginning of the show, you know, the transfer portal has opened up, and there's a lot of guys who have announced that they're entering the portal, you know, they're looking to further their college careers elsewhere. And there's some guys that are on Florida State's radar. First, I'll start with Jerry Dang, who was a freshman at Hampton University. I like this guy. I was able to watch this guy earlier today. Super versatile with the ball in his hands, tremendous size, you know, tremendous wingspan. He's a great 3-level scorer, you know, be able to score off the dribble, being able to be a spot-up shooter on defense. You know, he can be a rim protector, and on top of that, he can get into the passing lanes and be able to just, you know, disrupt teams in their half-court offense. So if they find a way to get this guy, I would be really, really happy. So talk about him a little bit more. What's your thoughts on him?
I'd be thrilled, you know, especially if Bobo Miller decides to move on for Florida State or vice versa. He can seamlessly slide in that role. He can handle the ball. 100%. You didn't even mention it. He shot almost 40% from three on close to four attempts per game last year. I mean, this kid can stroke it. And he's got a really, really pure jump shot. He reminds me offensively of a more refined Malik Osborne as far as shooting the ball. But he plays with that same kind of strength when he does get down low. And the way he steps out of shoots with threes, it kind of just mirrored it for me. I think he'd be a four, whereas Malik was more of a 4-5 tweener kind of guy. But he's long. He's athletic. I'd love to see more on the defensive end, which I think Coach Hamilton and the staff could absolutely get out of him with that size at 6'9", 220. And he's plenty athletic. I think he'd be a great fit. Even when I tweeted out that Florida State had contacted him, I had someone from some side, I forget what side it was, say, oh, this would be a perfect fit for Leonard Hamilton and his system if they could get him. I'd love to see them pursue this one pretty seriously.
I'm with you on that one. I am definitely with you. And those are my first thoughts whenever I did see him play, and then whenever I did see the announcement that he was, you know, considering Florida State, or, you know, or Florida State was looking to contact him, was he's the type of player that could fill in Baba Miller's role, you know, if Baba does decide to leave for the NBA or just, you know, transfer somewhere else. And I feel like he's ready. You know, I mean, in his freshman year, you know, he played tremendous basketball, you know, for Hampton. I know that Hampton wasn't necessarily a contender by any means, but, you know, just being able to put his entire game on full display was just really incredible. And, you know, I can only imagine him in lineups with a Jameer Watkins or, you know, anybody else, you know, on the floor, you know, just being able to take that pressure off of him, you know, with his ability to put the ball on the floor, with his ability to play anywhere on offense. You know, I think that'll be really huge for them. You know, I think that this is a team that needs more versatility, and I think that he could offer that to them.
Agree. And something I like to see most with these smaller school players is how do you perform in the big games you do have? Because they don't really get a lot of big games. But Hampton had one pretty big opponent, James Madison, who went 31-3 this year. Yeah. He had 18-6, hit 4 threes. And I won't say they contended in that game, but it was arguably closer than it should have been. And a lot of that was due to Jerry Dane. And it's something you really love to see out of a true freshman who was a little under-recruited coming out of Georgia.
Yeah. He's like I said, I mean, I'm a really big fan of him, man. And if Florida State's ever able to recruit him, that'd be huge. Talk about Marcus Foster out of Furman University. You know, as far as what I've seen, you know, the numbers, I haven't actually had a chance to really like see him play up close. But as far as, like, you know, his numbers, he's averaging around 17 a game. You know, he seems like he's a really great all around scorer. So talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, 17 points per game, 7.5 rebounds per game. He's more of a two guard than he is a true point guard. But 6'4", 200, that's right where Florida State wants their guards. Some people kind of drew back on his three-point shooting this year, you know, right under 30% this year on about 7 attempts. But he'd been a good shooter for most of his career. You know, in his junior season, shot 36% on over 5 attempts per game. He's really strong at the free throw line at above 80%. I think he's just a great inside scorer that has the potential to stretch the three if he's not relied upon to create, which he was this year. He was definitely dribbling the ball more, dishing the ball out more this year. If he can kind of be reserved back to that, you know, traditional two guard where he can play make here and there, but he's more of your spot up shooter, one or two dribble pull ups, get into the paint and finish, that's going to fit him a lot better. And I think that fits Florida State's offensive system really well, that, you know, likes to move the ball around, likes to play with pace. I think it'd be a perfect fit, but I also think it's going to be one of those, he's got a lot of interest from a lot of big schools, and I'd be surprised if he ends up at Florida State, just given the season they had and given some of the schools that are after him.
Yeah, they're going to have to pull some strings, you know, if they are going to be able to get him. But I mean, the biggest thing for Florida State is finding perimeter guys. And, you know, Marcus Foster definitely seems like a guy that they could definitely use. And I'm excited to see, you know, what this summer could bring, you know, for him, you know, if he does decide to land at Florida State. Anybody else on the radar besides him or no?
As of now, no, that's it. Obviously it's the first day of the transfer portal. Who knows what'll happen from here. We still haven't even seen anyone from Florida State enter yet, which I'm expecting anywhere between 3 and 6 names to enter. So I think we'll see some movement by the end of the week, and we'll see if they start bringing anybody in on official visits. It's also a lot different than the football transfer portal where things just happen in 2 or 3 days. With the portal in basketball open up before the NIT and before the tournament, a lot of movement won't really happen until after the tournament concludes, and some of these bigger schools can assess their roster at a better level than they could right now as they're trying to prepare for big games.
Yeah, for those listening, man, definitely keep your eye out on some of the transfers. You know, some guys that Florida State might have to honor, and on top of that, you know, a lot of our guys that are on the roster that may be looking to make their way out. But, you know, we'll definitely keep you guys updated as far as, you know, what's going on. But that'll wrap up this episode, man. Austin, once again, appreciate you for coming on, man. Definitely let the people know where to follow you, where to find, like, a lot of your recent articles.
Yep, absolutely. On Twitter/X at EasyVZNG. I'm trying to keep you all updated on things I'm seeing on Florida State contacting players. And obviously I'll keep people updated when Florida State players do decide to enter the portal as well. And SI.com/FSU/basketball. I'm trying to give you all an article a day if people are being reached out to, but we didn't really see much action these last couple of days. So hopefully that'll pick up here soon.
Yes, sir. Definitely keep an eye out on that, man. Follow myself and Nick Andre ATR. Make sure to check out a lot of my working articles on Chop Chat. Be sure to tune in with that. I got a recent piece on Jameer Walker, so make sure to be in tune with that. But once again, thank you guys so much for listening in, man. We definitely appreciate you guys, and hope you guys all have a good day.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.